Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. We head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our buddy Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How are you doing this morning?
Doing awesome. Are you familiar with the, what was it, the Ionia?
The Ionia Free Fair, baby.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't grow up in Michigan and not know about the Ionia Free Fair. I heard Joe's take on it. I'm surprised that Joe was shocked that Metallica played there. I think the Ionia Free Fair has actually drawn some huge acts over the years.
I'm not saying it's not a great fair. It's a great fair. We all agree. Okay. But yeah, I mean, you know, it was kind of random. Like, wait, Metallica's playing the Ionia Free Fair this summer? Okay.
Yeah. There you go. Childhood core memory of Joe Rex Road.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's call it the childhood.
Yeah. I'm being generous.
Very generous. So, Charles, we were discussing kind of the situation that Brian Callahan finds himself in now, with Cam Ward being the number one overall pick. Obviously, things went very poorly last year. And, you know, he had some glowing things to say about Will Levis heading into the season, and then it very quickly turned into a disaster. So what do you make of kind of where Callahan stands, and whether or not, you know, cause part of the evaluation is going to be here from the Titans' standpoint, is he the right guy to lead the organization and develop what they think they have in Cam Ward?
Right. Well, look, there's two – I'll give you one story about, you know, kind of like Callahan Levis, and then I'll give you another story about Callahan Ward, and through sort of things I've seen unfold in other teams. And the thing with Callahan and Levis, and I think I've probably brought this up on the show in the past, but it is a memory that I go back to repeatedly over and over again with quarterbacks, because it's probably the truest thing I ever heard. You know, a couple of years ago, I'm sitting with Kyle Shanahan. We're talking, and we're talking about Purdy, and I'm like, you know, I was telling Shanahan, I'm like, you know, I don't get it. Like, I'm still sitting here asking people the question about quarterbacks, like how you find a good quarterback. It's one of the first questions I asked when I started covering the NFL, you know, 24 years before. And I asked Kyle, I'm like, you know, like, why is this like this? It's been years and years and, you know, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars over decades poured into refining this process and understanding it, and yet people still make huge mistakes. And I was having the conversation with Shanahan in the context of Purdy was playing great, and I could tell, I had just been to practice, and I could tell Trey Lance was gone. I'm like, this guy's gone. He's not going to be here by the time the regular season starts. And he actually he got dealt to the Cowboys a couple of days after I, you know, sat there with Shanahan. And Shanahan said to me, he said, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, and I think I've said this before on the show, he talked about all the things you do to get it right. He's like, you know, all the film work you go through, all the character work you go through, the personal interviews, the one-on-ones, the private workouts. He said, then you draft the kid, you bring him in, you get your hands on him, you throw everything at him, you work with him on mechanics, you work with him on the whiteboard, you throw complexity at him, you challenge him, you support him, you do all these things. And he said, and you think you have it, you've got it exactly where it needs to be. And then he basically said, the terrifying thing is you have no idea if it's going to go right at all until he walks onto a field and plays a game, a real game. And he's like, that's the simple fact. That's it. He said, no matter, you can do every single thing right, you can feel a certain way, he can have everything going for him, and then you can watch him walk onto the field and and utterly fail. And we were having the conversation in the context of Purdy, but I'm like, he's talking about Trey Lance right now. Like, this is what he's talking about. This is what he's explaining to me. By trying to explain why Purdy worked, he's explaining to me how Trey Lance failed. And there were very different, you know, approaches for him. He didn't go in thinking Purdy was going to be great. He when they drafted Purdy and he came in, you know, Shanahan said one of the first things he thought was, oh, he's bigger than I thought he was going to be. You know, he's like, you know, I thought he was more of a shrimpy player, and like all these different, so it's completely different approaches. And yet one guy went out there and Shanahan knew almost instantaneously, whoa, OK, okay, it's just completely different. The way he handles it, the pressure, the stress of it, the leadership aspect, all this, it clicked, and he could see it pretty quickly. And the other guy, it just failed immediately and deeply and consistently. So that's what I would say about Callahan and maybe how he looked at Levis. I think, and I talked to Bill last, you know, training camp when I came through, we talked about Levis, and he imparted some of these stories about Levis to me. And I think he believed it. I do. I think he thought, hey, we got one here. Like, he's got the tools and he's got all these different things. But then Levis goes out on the field and you see what happens under pressure, under duress, you know, without protection. And, you know, you just see mistakes that are made. And the difference is it's now live. You walk down the field and there's zero wiggle room. Either you got it or you don't. So that is what I would say about Callahan and Levis and how maybe a coach sees one thing and then it completely turns out not to be what they expected. The other thing I would say is last preseason, I'm going on the training camp tour and the Jets had spent the joint practices with the Commanders. And I think I told you guys this story. I'm talking to a Jets source and the first thing he says to me starts raving about Jaden Daniels. And I'm like trying to talk to him about his team and he won't shut up about Jaden Daniels. And he's just like this. He's like, the dude's a baller. He's like, it's unbelievable. He's amazing. Like, he's so good. And he's just going on and on and on about it. But then he said to me, he's going to get killed there though. The offensive line's terrible. They're not going to be able to protect him. He's going to get hammered. He'll probably be hurt by the end of the season. And then Daniels walks out there and the season starts and he was the element that lifted that offensive line. Now, you know, they played, I think, a little over their heads in terms of what was expected, but he raised those boats through his ability to compensate as an athlete, as a quarterback, to understand what was in front. He had it, and you could see it very quickly. And I watched him when I went in, they played his first preseason game, and he audibled, like the Commanders had been telling him, we're going to run super basic. We're literally starting a guard at tackle this game who's like a backup guard. We don't want to get you hurt. Just run what we send in. He's like, okay. They send in a screen to Eckler or something in the flat to Eckler. And Jaden Daniels is on the field, and he just decides, you know what? I see a setup here. I see something in the defense. I'm going to throw a go ball to Deami Brown, right? And he's not supposed to. So he calls, like, he audibles into it, and, like, the players are like, uh-oh, like, he's not supposed to be doing this. And on the sidelines, they're going nuts. They're freaking out because they're like, we told you not to do this. What are you doing? So it was a 40-yard, beautiful, beautiful 40-yard pitch and catch to Deami Brown. Dan Quinn's going nuts. He's screaming at him from the sidelines. Cliff Kingsbury is yelling at him. Like, he's in trouble, and Jaden Daniels just looks at the sideline and he smiles. And you know, like, all the players are like, yeah, this dude's got it. They're like, we understand he wasn't supposed to do that. That's kind of crazy. But he showed them something in that moment. And I think it's that indefinable sort of it quality of, like, your mentality, how you handle things, you know, afterward, Dan Quinn kind of laughed about it. He called it the Top Gun buzz the tower moment. Like, you know, he does not have clearance to buzz the tower, and he did it anyway. And, you know, so I think when you look at Ward, that's what you're going to find out. Like, it's all about, does he have the ability to step on the field and bring that it quality to his performance that meets or exceeds what their expectations are of him? And again, I keep looking back at Shanahan, and I believe this. You don't know until he goes out there, the same way the Commanders didn't know until Jaden Daniels got out there on the field. They did not know he was going to be as good as he was last year until he got out there and started to showcase it.
Yeah. Yeah, those are great anecdotes. And, yeah, I know. I think at this point we should all be able to embrace that, right, that, like, look at how many failures there have been. Look at how many out of nowhere success stories there have been. Clearly, yeah. All the homework, all the data, all the film, like, it's still like, okay, well, here we go. Push the baby on the carpet and see what happens.
Joe, how did everybody miss on Purdy that badly? Like, I mean, seriously.
He was really good in college, too. He's a very good college quarterback.
He was a very good college quarterback.
Change that program.
Even Shanahan said that a year later, he was studying Clemson players on tape. And he pulled up an Iowa State Clemson game, And he said he felt stupid because he was watching it and he was like, why didn't I see this on Purdy? Like, he was like, I was seeing things trying to watch Clemson tape. I kept staring at Purdy. He said, I was seeing things that I saw him translate to the NFL level, like intangible things. And he's like, and it just didn't even though they drafted him, that never stuck with him. It never resonated with him in the process of, you know, getting to the point where they and I don't think it's not like they did like a super deep dive on Brock Purdy either, let's be fair. But he was like, you know, I'm sure I saw that tape and it did not stick out to me the way it did a year later. And the only reason it stuck out to him a year or two later was because he'd seen Purdy do it on the NFL level, and then he goes back and looks at his tape. And he's like, man, he was doing this in college. I just didn't pay close enough attention. He missed. That was it. And they got lucky, and they drafted him last in the last pick in the draft, and he saved their butts. And but that's why it's why it works for some guys, and it doesn't work for others. You know, we've covered this league long enough where we see physically gifted guys, and we're like, that guy's going to hit. He is going to be a superstar. And then they just don't. They just don't have. Carson Wentz, another one. I mean, if you took the top 25 NFL plays that Carson Wentz has ever put together, you would watch him and be like, oh, my God, he's as good as any quarterback in the league. But the problem is you take his bottom 25 plays, and there's some of the worst things you've ever seen a player do. Like a quarter, like it's literally – and that's it. That's the – I remember when Mahomes was coming out of Texas Tech, and I remember he signed with Lee Steinberg. And so I started kind of poking around and, you know, kind of asking, like, you know, how good is Mahomes? Oh, yeah, I'd seen some of the college stuff or whatever. And I remember guys telling me, like, yeah, you know, he's got a huge arm. He kind of does stupid stuff, though. He'll make some stupid throws. Like, he way overcompensates for his arm, you know, sometimes. Like, it's a cannon. But, man, that guy will stick balls in places where you're just like, dude, what are you doing? Like, some of the hero ball stuff. You same thing with Cam Ward, right? Really good arm, not as good as Mahomes, but he's got a really good arm.
Charles just compared Ward and Mahomes.
There we go.
There we go. Great. Please, someone aggregate that. but like, you know, he'll make some of those throws where guys are like, yeesh, man, like, come on. Like, what are you doing? You can't, every play does not have to be a victory. Like, it's okay, you know. But I heard the same thing, you know, about Mahomes too. And so it's sort of like, until you watch the guy walk out there and do it for real, you know, in a game, you're probably not really going to fully know or understand whether or not he has it. That's just the reality of the quarterback position. It stinks, but it's been like that forever. And, you know, that's just, you got to kind of go through it. I'm excited for Titans fans. I think I'm glad they made this pick. You know, we talked about this last week. Like, there was clearly a shelf between he and Shador. I didn't realize the shelf was as vast as it ended up being. But
it's a canyon.
Yeah, I mean, this to me was this is it. You if you're gonna swing an upside, and this is it. This is the upside swing. Like, if I'm sitting there going, all right, I'm in the AFC and I gotta compete. If I'm gonna make the playoffs, I gotta compete with, you know, how many Hall of Fame quarterbacks are in the AFC right now. I got to get a guy who's got a ceiling, and this guy's got the ceiling.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Shador, because I was going to go there next. And speaking of film and evaluation, I'm sticking with, I think he's good. I think he was a real NFL prospect who's probably a fringe first rounder, who obviously we saw what happened to him. So, Charles, do you think that there's any culpability in terms of how he was covered leading into the draft?
No. Are you going to do the media thing? Is it me? All the mock drafts?
I'm just asking the question.
No, it's a bunch of garbage. This is part of the problem we have with Shador and frankly, Deion. Like, it's always somebody else's fault. Like, somebody else did this. Somebody, you know, oh, it's the media built him up, and that's when he really wasn't this, and it was the mock drafters, and it was everybody on the grift, and they did the kid wrong, and that's why. And then, you know, he's getting first and foremost, before the draft, like, I hit up 10 teams, right? At that time, 9 out of 10 told me they believed he would be taken in the first round. They didn't necessarily have first round grades on him, but they believed he'd be taken in the first round because there were multiple teams that had significant need at quarterback, and they were, frankly, not always the most well-run franchises. And those are the franchises that take risks And if Shador was going to be a risk, he's probably going to get, you know, the team that bites is going to be a team that historically has taken some bad gambles. And yet, you know, he goes into the second round, and then at that point I'm texting guys. I'm like, what's going on? And they're like, okay, look, the real evaluation on him, the real grade on him, the athletic profile, all these different things, he's not a first-round quarterback. Then once he gets into the second round, where does he fit in the second round? You know, even the critics are like, yeah, probably late second, maybe even early third. Those are the critics. Late second, probably, you know, late second, maybe early third. Once he fell out of the second round and then the third round, I called a former GM who had spent the last two seasons scouting him had scouted him the last two seasons. And I said, you know, and he was a big critic of Shador. And I said, what's going on here? I'm like, I know you'll give me the honest truth because you've been a critic all along. And he was like, look, fall of the third feels personal. Like he was like, at this point it feels, he's like, he said he was shocked. He was like, I think at this point it feels personal. So what it looks like unfolded was the talent, the profile, what he was as a football player was not a first-round quarterback. And then once you get past the second round and you get into the third round and beyond, then it's how you handled the process. And it wasn't mock drafters. It wasn't, you know, Deion was out there telling everybody, my kid's a top 10 pick. I, you know, he made statements about pulling, you know, Eli Manning, all these different things. There were teams, you know, there's a lot of very respected ex-NFL employees who do mock drafts who had Shador, if not in the first round, in the second round. I mean, definitely did not see him falling the way he fell. So, look, you have to blame him where I think it's appropriate. When you get past what you are as an athletic athlete, when you get past what your evaluation is as a quarterback, and then you start going later and later and later, you did something in the process to cause that to happen. And on the tail end of it, we're finding out he was taken off some boards. And I think, frankly, if we could report it, there would be some boards that would shock you that he was taken off of. And I think it happened because of the experiences that these teams ultimately had with him. That all that stuff, the visceral comments that Tom Pelissero reports, and we go crazy, turned out to be true. Like, it turned out to be true, like feelings. The feelings were true. Those were real. And that affected, I think, ultimately where he went in the draft. And I also don't like the fact that when he came off the board, look, the video snippet is what it is. The Browns did not look thrilled. I will agree that can be a matter of timing and when it shows up on TV or whatever. But when Andrew Berry got asked, did the owner influence this pick? Andrew went to Harvard, okay? Smart guy, bright guy, worked on Wall Street. I think he's a pretty good evaluator. Definitely knows what he's doing, and he most certainly knows the economy of language. All he had to say was no. Instead, he said, Jimmy lets us do our jobs. That's five words too many. Could have said one word, no. Did the owner influence his pick? I went to Harvard, no. Jimmy lets us do our jobs. That's not
Jimmy's a super guy. Have I ever told you about what a great guy Jimmy is?
That's just not an answer. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, also you're a smart guy. Now you have five quarterbacks, one of which you're going to end up putting on season-ending injured reserve. Okay, so now you're down to four quarterbacks. One guy's Joe Flacco, who you can't cut because he's the most experienced guy in the room. Two of them are your rookies, a third rounder and a fifth rounder, which is just wonky in and of itself. And then another guy, Kenny Pickett, you just traded for. You're going to carry four quarterbacks? You're going to carry four quarterbacks into the season. I guess because you have to now, because you took, you know, Shador in the fifth. And you can't answer that the owner didn't influence the pick. So it was quite the saga, man. Like, it was just and again, I think Deion, there's some culpability on Deion Sanders' end for this because
I think than people are giving credit for.
Absolutely, because Deion told that kid over and over and over again, you're a top 10 pick, you're maybe a number one overall pick, you're this, you're that. And if you're Shador and you hear that enough from your dad, who you trust and believe in and who's coached you basically the entirety of your high level football, your entire lifespan, you're like, okay, I'm a top 10 pick. And then when you go through the process, what do you do when you get a team near the bottom of the first round that wants to talk to you in a private visit? do you take that as seriously as you need to? Or do you sit there and go, yeah, there's maybe two or three places I want to play. Everybody else, eh.
Yeah, but there's still no excuse for not taking it seriously and not being a pro. I mean, right? That's why I start to shift it to him.
100%. And it's, by the way, it's, and I want to be very fair to that kid. He wouldn't have been the first kid to do that at all. Okay. Like I told you a story in the past about, there was a quarterback that went extremely high in a draft. He went on a draft visit with a team, literally a private visit with a team, goes to the facility, and he's like, I'm not going to be on board for these guys. So the way he handled that was, he gets put into a meeting with the offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach in one of their classrooms. The guy who's leading him around the building, showing him around and responsible for making sure he's on time for every single meeting, all of a sudden that guy starts getting text messages from the quarterback going, so what's going on next? And it was like 15 minutes after he walked into the room, this classroom, with the OC and the quarterback's coach. So this guy's like, wow, the meeting's over already? So he walks down to the room.
Can we do lunch now?
He pokes his head in the room. The coach, the OC and the quarterback's coach are up on the whiteboard and they're working on installs. And the player is not even paying attention. He's on his phone texting. He's not. He's like completely blowing it off.
See, now this is a generational conversation.
This is
TikTok.
He's not part of this. You know, this was a few years ago. Okay, so I mean, I'll put it this way: it's in the last 6 years, seven years.
Like, God,
it's
in that range. I was hoping it was Johnny Manziel.
So, but yeah, I mean, it was. Look, this is a train wreck. But don't miss me with the media stuff. Miss me with he was a victim of the mock drafts. I'm like, we're going to blame the mock drafts for this, really? We're going to blame the mock draft.
And collusion, too.
There's that, too.
And then that whole garbage nonsense. Like, to me, as he fell and that stuff started to happen, and it was a fall, by the way. We can go ahead and say it. It was a slide. He's not a fifth. His talent is better than the fifth round. So we can go ahead and go, oh, it wasn't a slide. The board told the truth. No, it didn't this time. But when that happened, and then you said, you know, and you brought up Stephen A. Smith and what he said about, you know, I think he brought up Kaepernick, right? And like, yes. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, what's happening now makes the kid less draftable than ever, because now he's falling and he's not someone you're going to select to be a starter for you. You know, he's not, you know, once he gets past a certain point, you're not picking him and then having him walk in the building and saying, hey, it's an open, you know, open competition for the starting quarterback job. No, now you're drafting him as just like a developmental piece on your roster, right? He might not even be your number two quarterback. He might be your number three quarterback. You want to draft that guy now that you see how the public reacts to the fact that he's experiencing some pretty terrible adversity. Like, the prank call sucked. Like, that was unnecessary. I'm glad he got fined for it, because, you know, at some point, you know, your kid's going to have to learn. It's a terrible way to learn. But don't do stupid stuff, and don't film yourself doing stupid stuff. But that was terrible. But this is just all the stuff around him. And I would argue that's why it went the way it went, because this is so much extra stuff, and the juice is not worth the squeeze. He's not a top 10. If he's a top 10 quarterback, then fine. If he's a top 10 pick, then fine. You will deal with this crap. You know, if you feel like he's got the talent to be a top 10, you know, pick, you'll deal with all the extra. That was not the case here. And he blew the pre-draft process, and his dad is who he is, you know, and it was literally everything that could have went wrong, and it was just the highest profile slide. But now it doesn't matter. I mean, that's the thing. And I, in his defense, I'll say this. I feel like he's been pitch perfect all the way through. I feel like he's said everything that he needed. I could do without the legendary stuff. Stop saying legendary, but he has reacted to this in a way that makes me think maybe he'll make it. Maybe. Like, fifth round quarterbacks don't make it. Maybe he will, because in the face of everything that's happened, he never blew a gasket. He never did anything stupid. He said only good things, like all the stuff he said to the local beat writers about coming in and, you know, hey, getting to know the veterans and supporting the veterans and, you know, just getting his feet under him. I was like, okay, like, he's handling it about as well as he possibly could. And I actually thought, maybe it'll be good for him to get away from Deion. Maybe it'll be good for him to go off on his own and be coached by someone else and be responsible for himself in a way that it's not constantly connected to his dad. Charles, those are two long segments.
No, that's good. Charles, last thing for you here, very quickly, your thoughts on the Bill Belichick situation.
Speaking of bleep shows.
That continues to be in the news cycle.
Yeah. I actually wrote about this today. I wrote it last night for today. Look, the way I absorb this, like, is if Bill is going to get another NFL shot, and this is exactly what I wrote, like, there's way more to squeeze through the door now than there used to be. Like, this is Bill had a lot of baggage coming out of New England, but it was all football baggage, right? It was all like ego related baggage with the owner, the quarterback, or this or that, but it was all football. It was still football, lived in the context of that world. He now, with what's going on with this relationship, and I, you know, look, the age difference, all that stuff, whatever. I mean, it is what it is. Like, people can have their opinions and make the jokes and all this stuff. I mean, I'm just like, whatever. I don't care about that. What I care about is that since he's gotten to UNC, I've heard more about his personal life and I've seen more about his personal life than anything I know about UNC football, than anything I know about what he's doing there to build a program. And also, I think a lot of it is invited. It's invited by his girlfriend, who, you know, has been very public about, like, here's all these pictures of us, here are these things we're doing, you know, things she's saying, like, all these different things. That's fine. I mean, your relationship's your relationship. But when you're an NFL team and you've passed on Bill because of football baggage for two off seasons, and then now you might reconsider him again, it's not just football stuff. Now you're like, what is this? Like, what is all this stuff? Like, this is a whole other side of Belichick no one ever had to really think about much. And, you know, he had some things here and there that would pop up with his relationships that would become fodder for Page Six and all that, TMZ. But not like this, not on this level. And I think that's, to me, the takeaway from what's going on right now. When I stare at it from an NFL perspective, I think teams are like, man, it's a lot. It's a lot, and it's a lot in ways that we are very unfamiliar with when it has come to Bill Belichick. Now, if he kills it at North Carolina, I mean, if he turns them into a national title contender in 1 year, which would be a miracle, if he does that, it'll forgive some things. You know, then maybe Bill coaching your team at 74 years old in 2026 becomes a little more tenable than, you know, yeah, he's still a really good coach, but he's 74 years old. There's this other thing. People are so infatuated with gawking at it. It's not going to go away. And it's a very public, you know, part of his life now that everybody talks about. As I said, this seems like a distraction. Bill does, the old Bill didn't like distractions. This new Bill, I don't know. This is something different.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Charles, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us today. And we'll talk to you next week.
All right, appreciate it, guys. Have a good day.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrow. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. Robbie and Rexrow, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.